Hello, this is Kendra Brodeen, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com, and today I'm delighted to bring you a conversation with Angela De La Housse. Angela founded De La Housse & Associates in 2000. She began her career in civil business litigation and uses this advantage in managing the litigation strategy and trial work, as well as specializing in the transactional areas of corporate and business legal issues. Angela handles entity formations, contract negotiations and drafting, commercial real estate matters, business acquisitions, mergers and sales, and employment disputes, as well as a host of other business legal issues. Angela is a board member and general member of several organizations and nonprofits, including the Los Angeles and Contra Costa Bars, the Women's and Business Section of the Contra Costa Bar, Graduate Leadership Contra Costa, and a board member of the Walnut Creek Chamber of Commerce, the National Women's Chamber of Commerce, the National Organization of Women Business Owners, and she's co-chair of the task force of the Contra Costa Council and the board of director of the Women's Initiative, also the Contra Costa Division. Angela has given many speeches and written several articles on business legal issues. So, Angela, I'm delighted to welcome you to the call today.
Oh, thank you, Kendra. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to hearing from you and learning from you as we work through the questions. So with that, I'd love to just jump right in and invite you to take a look back on your personal history, be it professional or personal, educational, or your legal practice. And I'm wondering if, as you look back, you feel as if you've always been generally good at balancing work and life or the competing priorities that you were experiencing, or if it was something that at some pivotal point or critical moment in your life you decided you needed to do the balance or do the juggle in a different way to actually accomplish that balance between the personal and the professional.
Well, I think in general it was a really slow progression, and I think, you know, as I went through my career and my children were born and grew and got a little bit older, I learned how to prioritize things, I guess is the best way to say it, and how to identify something that really was important to me that I didn't want to miss, whether it be something to do with the children, you know, a little league game or a play or a doctor's appointment. There were just certain things that after a period of time I decided were not going to be missed. And same with work. There were certain things that I just decided, you know, I'm going to prioritize this. This is a very important project for me, and I'm going to put my heart and soul into this, and other things are just going to have to wait. But I think the evolution came more with a building of the business itself and my confidence in what I was doing and my confidence that I could let other things go a little bit and that it would be okay. Everything would be okay. You know, I didn't have to be engaged at work 100% of the time. And if the kids had a sitter and someone else was helping with them with their homework or project, it would be okay. And so I think with experiencing things and being a big part of their lives and knowing that they understood and would adapt to certain things, I think that confidence grew. And I think that was a bigger piece of it than just a pivotal moment. Although I will say there's a big spread between my youngest and my middle son. And at the time that I had my youngest son, I was a partner at a small firm, and they did not really they never said that it wasn't okay to have children, but they just it just was not a big part of where they were headed. And I remember working there for a period of time and really wanting a third child and putting it off and putting it off. At some point, if anything could have been pivotal, it would have been that, where I just talked to my husband and said, this is really something I want to do. We both did. And I think there's never going to be a right time, but this is as good as it gets. And I let the people at the firm know that that's what I wanted to do. And it actually ended up catapulting me to start my own firm because I ended up leaving. So if there was anything pivotal, I think that would be it.
That's, I think, so true sometimes with women who have started their own firms, is it was born out of something like what you experienced, where they just couldn't create or make the kind of experience and work situation that they needed in a larger firm, or that the firm that they were at was not as conducive or supportive as they needed it to be, and that almost propelled them into the creation of their own firms.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I think, you know, the general perception is that women are risk averse when they start their own businesses or need to take bigger steps, but I don't know that that's necessarily true. It was a big leap of faith for me to go out on my own. And like I say, you know, I think confidence, your confidence grows after a while, after you see that clients have faith in you and you can do things and get results and plan things strategically and execute on them. That confidence level begins to grow, and I think that allows you to then go to the next phase of your business life and take your company to the next level. So that was my pivotal moment, I would say, if there was one.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, as you said, there was both an evolution over time, maybe leading up to that pivotal moment where push came to shove and you needed to make a big decision and take that risk that did take some courage to get out there and do your own thing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Angela, what would you say during that time or maybe even since then has been your biggest challenge as you look back and over your own evolution, your own journey in trying to create balance in your life between your legal practice and your family and other interests and community service things, all the things you're doing, what's been the biggest challenge you've experienced in trying to create balance?
Well, I think time management is probably the biggest challenge. You know, and I know that's so well understood. I mean, it's like, that's a given, you know, but I think there's only so many hours in a day, unfortunately, even if you don't need a lot of sleep, which I don't, but your volunteer work is very important to me. Being a part of the community is very, very important to me and my business and also the people that I service, you know, our clients. And being a big part of my children's lives and my marriage is also very important. And so I wear a lot of hats a lot of the time. You know, I have to have a change of clothes in the back of my car to go to games and things, you know, or events, so I'm not always walking on the soccer field in pumps. But but I think, and a suit in my office, you know, in case something happens and I have to run out to court or something. But I think that it's always that time management. You can be prepared for almost anything, but if there's not enough hours in the day to execute, it's really difficult. And so my biggest challenge is usually carving out enough hours in the day to do my job and do it really well and manage the attorneys that I manage and then also be there for my children at a critical time. You have two teenagers, and I remember running into a woman in court when my oldest son was a baby, and I was trying to decide whether to go back to work full-time or part-time, and I sat down next to her before our hearing, and we started talking about children, and she had a teenager, and she said the most important time to be home is preschool and high school, and it's just really important to be there. She was saying, you know, in effect, don't give up your job, but be around. It's really important. And now that I have two teenagers, I can say that that's absolutely true. So it's important, you know, to be there for them. They need you. And so it's just time management and figuring out how to make the day work. We have a very interesting calendar. It's got so many colors. It's color-coded, you know, and that always will be, I think, my biggest challenge is figuring out where to be and when and prioritizing.
When we only have those 24 hours in a day, and it's just like, if only we could have more. And I think we would always need more. If we had 36, we'd need 48.
And then along those lines, you know, you have to make choices. You can't be at all places at all times. And even if you have great help, which I do, and my husband's very supportive, you know, you just can't be everywhere. And so I think another big piece of that is the fighting for time is to fight those shoulds. You know, if you are going to be at work and you have to be at work and something's going on at school that you feel like you would love to be there, you have to fight those demons in your head, the guilt, because it really doesn't, it's not good for anybody. And try to make it up, you know, if you can. But, and conversely, if you're at, you know, with your children and you feel like you should be working on a project, if you're not fully engaged with your children, it's really hard to look back and say you had quality time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's both. It's the time management and then fighting that, whatever it is, the shoulds or the guilts or, you know, the voices in your head that are telling you you should be somewhere else or you could be doing something different.
Mm-hmm. Making the best decision you can in that moment and then being okay with that.
And being present and enjoying it.
Exactly, and letting that go, whatever you weren't able to do because you made the decision you made, just trusting yourself to have made the right decision and then moving forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. What would you say, Angela, then, on sort of the flip side, and maybe it's similar to what you've been talking about in terms of time management and not getting too wrapped up in the shoulds and the guilt, but maybe it's distinct from that. I'm wondering what your biggest lesson has been. What have you learned along the way? Maybe it's more philosophical or just a way of thinking about things, but your biggest lesson in terms of aligning and creating balance between who you are as a lawyer and who you are in your personal life as a mom and a wife and a community member.
Mm-hmm. I think they're really different. I think in terms of business, my biggest lesson has been to teach myself to kind of step back and look at things as objectively as possible when a difficult decision needs to be made. And that's in terms of a case that maybe we have new evidence or something turns, but more importantly in running the business, because you have to be able to be honest at the end of the day. You have to be able to make sure it's a profitable entity or it does no one any good. And so for me, it's been the ability to step back and take a look at the business and make hard decisions and then carry through on them. And that's been an interesting lesson for me. A lot of times I think we want things to be a certain way and maybe they aren't, or it's a time to grow and it's a difficult decision to make, or an employee isn't working out as you'd expected. Those kinds of things where, you know, I solely own my business and we have a few attorneys and we have some support staff. And so there's not a team of partners that I can go to and talk about things with. So I really have to have the ability to be just brutally honest with myself in looking forward. And I do have some advisors that I go to that will help me see clearly, but at the end of the day, I need to be really honest and be able to execute and make those really hard decisions. And that's been a lesson that I've learned, you know, that you do have to do that. And on the parenting side, I would say the lesson I've learned is to say when I'm wrong, to admit when I'm wrong, and I think that that's been really enlightening and important for my kids to hear. And if something came up and I couldn't be there, to be able to sit down with them and talk to them about how difficult it was to miss whatever it was I missed, or if I made a bad decision and I look back and I feel like they deserved better, it wasn't a good decision as far as maybe a punishment or some sort of consequence that they had, or some decision we made as parents, to be able to go back to them and say, you know, we could have done a better job, I think has been a really good lesson for me. It doesn't make you less of a parent, because I think we all come from certain paradigms. I think it might have been harder for the generation before us to admit when they were wrong. And so that's been a good lesson for me on the parenting side.
And you've been, in doing that, such a good model. You know, as you said, we all come from different backgrounds and paradigms and ways that our parents showed up for us, and you know, admitting that they did the best they could with what they had, and maybe there's ways that we've chosen to parent that are similar, and maybe they're different. But being able to model that for our children, being graceful when we've made a mistake, and saying, "Look, I did make a mistake, and I'm sorry," because I think those are very mature things to be able to do, and it's so much easier when you've had that modeled for you to know how to say, "I made a mistake. And I admit I was wrong, and I apologize for any pain or frustration or anything I've caused." I mean, there's many, many adults that can't say those words. So for you to be able to say that to your children and allow them to see you do that and see that it's okay to admit that, I think you're doing them such a great service. And we do that for our children when we can admit those mistakes.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I think it's important for them to hear that, you know, parents there's no recipe. You know, parents are doing the best job that they can. And ultimately, the family is a team, and you have to all work together and understand these things. And everyone's going to make mistakes, you know, and it makes them, I think, hopefully more able to admit when they're wrong as well and see that it's not a fault. You know, it's just we're human, and that's and it's okay. It's, you know, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it serves them so much growing up. And also then they're not beating themselves up. I mean, I know I'm prone to beat myself up when I make a mistake.
Right.
You know, and I
we
don't
are.
Want to pass that on to my
right.
children. I want them
exactly.
to be able to say, oops, I made a mistake. I accept my consequences, and I'm moving on now.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Angela, what would you say then in terms of maybe thinking about that big lesson or maybe thinking a bit differently, what have been some strategies or tools or tips that you've used that you found that worked for you and your family or you and your legal practice that you could share, maybe more practical or tactical or strategic things that have worked for you and you think might work for others?
Well, on the side of the, you know, the side of the business, I've found that it really helps me to surround myself with advisors who are the best in their field. So, and to listen to them and ask them questions frequently. So, you know, I have an accountant who is like our financial CFO, and he's someone that I turn to frequently for questions, and he gives me a lot of really clear advice. And similarly, you know, if you can have, you know, I have a business consultant that I can turn to. I have an HR company that I can turn to. I think surrounding yourself as a business owner and even as an attorney with advisors or people that you trust and know that can be honest with you and straightforward and not just tell you what you want to hear, but really give you the clarity and the honesty that you need to hear. That's something that I've found to be invaluable, and to ask hard questions when you need to ask them, not wait till it's too late. And then the other thing is that I really, really think is critical is to value your employees, everybody, you know, from the file clerk to the top litigation attorney that we have, the trial attorney. I mean, I think everybody fits into this bigger realm of the legal community and the legal service that we provide. And valuing the people that support whatever you're doing is so important. I can't say that enough. I turn to the people at my business, and every single person there is incredibly good at what they do. I just every day am so proud and pleased to be part of an organization where such sophisticated legal business decisions are made, and the people that support those decisions are 100% dedicated to their jobs. So I value them beyond what I can express probably in an interview, but I think that's so important. Mm-hmm. So those are, I try to live by that. And then, you know, we live in a day and an age of a very litigious society. And, you know, everything is about the, you know, writing and signing things and making sure the written word says what you mean it to say. But I have to say that I stand by my word, I think, is another one. You know, if I give my word, that's as good as anything I could sign, and I stand behind that, too. So I think those are some tips, because I think you gain credibility that way, not only with the people that you work with and your colleagues, but also the people that work for you.
And that appreciation, that just being gracious and generous with praise and appreciation for others. We don't see that as much as we could, I think, in society today, in our world. And again, what do we model for our kids? What do we model for others? And it is sometimes that ripple effect, not to be too cheesy about it, but I think it ripples out from us when you share a word of appreciation or gratitude with someone. Not only do they feel appreciated and recognized and respected, but they're likely then to go out and share that same, or at least think about sharing that same feeling with someone else in their life. And think we impact more people than we know when mm-hmm. we just respect people for what they're contributing.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that motivate people, but I think there's a common misconception that it's just money. And I really think that people are motivated by being challenged and also given a lot of autonomy. You know, people really want, I think the human desire is to perform well and excel and move up. And if you can give people the tools to do that and then move out of their way and let them do it, give them the autonomy they need and then recognize them when they do, I think, you know, people really, that's as big a motivation as, you know, a monetary compensation, as long as you're paying them what they should be paid. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to someone about this, a business owner, about, you know, what motivates people and employees, because we both had the success of having the same employees for over a long period of time. And I was saying how impressed I was that I got an email at 10 o'clock at night from one of his employees mm-hmm. who seemed truly, you know, to be happy to be working. And we talked about the motivating factors and what, you know, what we both thought. But I think that's so important. Even for, you know, even if you don't own your own business and you have a team of people supporting you, I think it's just so important.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And like you said, people are so often motivated by much more than just their paycheck, especially when you are good to them and you respect them as individuals, as part of your team. They want to help you and they want to be of service to you and play their part that you've entrusted to them and do it in a really excellent way. And I think that's the way that we can, when you think of it more like a team and appreciating everyone who's in a different position, so to speak, on the team, people want to come together and create something extraordinary.
Right. And giving credit, you know, where credit's mm-hmm. due. I mean, I remember being a brand new litigation junior associate in a big firm in L.A. and working for weeks on this motion and gave it to the senior associate, who then gave it to the partner, and the partner walked it in the meeting and, you know, told the client that he'd prepared it, and I was on another floor. I happened to pass the client in the elevator, and it was a real lesson to me. You know, we won the motion, but the senior attorney had no idea what was in it. I mean, really, he didn't argue it. He just presented it to the client and took all the credit.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I'm never going to meet that client.
Mm-hmm.
It dawned on me. I'm surprised I was that naive, but, you know, at the time it was a shock, an absolute shock that I could do all this work and not even meet the client. And so, you know, fast forward, you know, 20 years later, and I have my own firm.
Right. But you learned.
Meet all the clients.
That's right. Well, right.
No, but I think, I try to be good about, I'm sure I've made mistakes, but I try to be good about giving credit where credit is due. And if an attorney works on something, making sure that that attorney can explain it well to the client, and is if he doesn't do the oral argument or she, then they're certainly present for it. So that's really important.
And it was such a teachable moment for you. I mean, you can remember vividly that experience of not meeting the client and what that felt like. And I think that those things inform us later on that we think, I never want to make someone else feel that way who put so much effort or time or energy into something. And I don't think we have this perception that the clients care desperately that we were the ones doing it versus someone else. But I think for the most part, as long as it got done and got done well, why not give credit to the people who did the work on it?
Oh, absolutely. And God forbid you're asked a hard question as a senior partner.
Right.
It was a good lesson for me and our support staff too is great. So
I think there are those lessons sometimes that make us feel really bad in the moment or uncomfortable or frustrated, and sometimes when we have to look for, okay, just to take a deep breath and what am I learning from this, because I can't really make the situation different, but what am I learning? And in that case or in other cases like it, we can just learn how we don't want to be. We can learn what we want to do in the future in a similar situation, and that's an invaluable lesson. That's a gift that we can take away from those moments of real aggravation, is that it shifts who we are and how we show up for other people. And that's something very valuable.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think at some of the most difficult points in my career or my business, where I thought that something was happening that was going to be, you know, incredibly damaging or difficult, it almost every time resulted in something better. I mean, there may have been three or four steps in between, but it was a period of growth. It's just that at the time you can't see it.
Right.
You know.
You just have to trust a little bit that ultimately things will be okay, and like you said, probably better, but sometimes, once in a while, you see it right then, and you can say, oh, look, this is a better outcome than I could have had. Sometimes, as you said, there's maybe two or three steps in between, but when you have the introspection and the self-awareness to look back and say, where did this really start at, you can pinpoint it to that moment that was rather unpleasant, but that started that ball rolling actually in the right direction.
Right, exactly.
Angela, but as we're sort of wrapping up our time together, I'm wondering if there's any final thoughts or final words of advice that you'd like to offer other women attorneys who are trying to do this dance, this juggle between family and work and building their practice and having a fulfilling and meaningful personal life. Are there any closing words you'd like to offer?
I would say we're all born with a really good sense of awareness, and I would say a lot of times I just need a moment of quiet to hear my own thoughts and to listen to my gut. I call it the gut check. And, you know, every once in a while when something difficult comes up and I find myself worrying about it or anxious about it, I'll do whatever, you know, I'll get to that place, whether it's taking a walk behind our house on this trail or taking a run and listening to my inner self, what's really important, what needs to happen here. And sometimes I don't have that luxury. Sometimes I have to make a decision right away in my office in front of people or a board. And you just have to trust your instincts. I think we get to a certain point in life and everything we know is stored somewhere in our brain and or in our being. And you have to be able to quiet things down in your own mind enough to reflect on what's really important here and what's the right decision to make and trust it and go with it, you know. Don't look back.
That's so true. And that gut check, as you called it, and that intuition or just thinking back, like you said, there's so much wisdom that we've stored away in our subconscious or in our mind or in those figurative file cabinets that are back there that, as you said, we can't access them sometimes, usually, in the heat of the moment, but when we can quiet things down and get away and, you know, it's amazing. I don't know. I've had the experience, I wonder if you have, where, you know, somebody asks you a question, you don't know the answer, but you have this feeling that it's in there somewhere. You just can't retrieve it at this instant. And then 2 hours later, it'll be just come shooting out of you.
Right, exactly.
It just took a little time. So it's in there.
Or the next day, yes.
That's right. Isn't it funny? I mean, anything from work for clients or who was in this movie or, you know,
yeah,
do you remember this?
Exactly.
And it's in there. It just sometimes takes a little while to float to the top. So
it does.
We can trust that it's there. Excellent. Well, Angela, it's been so delightful talking with you. I appreciate your time and your words and the wisdom that you've shared. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you, Kendra. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to share these ideas and experiences with you.
I appreciate the opportunity to listen to them and to talk with you and also then through this conversation to share them with countless other women attorneys who I know will appreciate them as well. So with that, we'll close out the conversation with Angela. I trust that you've heard something within her words that is a gem to you, is something of treasure that you can implement in your life to make your life better or your legal practice more meaningful or improve it in some other way. So until next time, this is Kendra Brodine of WomenLawyersOnline.com wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thank you for being here today. Bye-bye.